Succession Season 2, Episode 6, Our Jesties. Our Guesties? Our Guesties? How do you pronounce it?
I don't know.
Let's go with Our Jesties. Our Jesties is over, but Our Jesties are just getting started here on Post Show Recap.
Oh, delicious.
Hello, everybody. I'm Josh Wigger. That's Emily Fox. Emily, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's Emily Fox and I, the MySpace of Succession podcasters, coming back your way. Emily?
Yes?
It took a little while, but we're back.
We're back.
We're back. We here for you.
We hear for you in both ways.
We hear for you. We're listening, and hopefully you are listening as well, even though this Succession podcast coming a little bit later. We warned you. We said we had some travel coming up. I think that the podcast is coming much later than either of us anticipated, but at least it's here.
Yeah.
And we've got a big episode of Succession to talk about, a lot of feedback to sort through this week, Emily Fox. People were very lit up, fired up by the latest events in Succession Land.
Are you wearing your puffy vest like I am?
Well, not to burst the illusion, but you and I are literally sitting next to each other. So if you turn your head slightly to
the
right, you will see that I'm not wearing any kind of vest at all.
Okay, I'm not either.
No, you're not. You're wearing a Lonely Island long sleeve t-shirt. I'm wearing a Syracuse University t-shirt.
Cool.
That's it. That's to paint the picture. Emily's got, once again, a big goblet of rosé in her hand.
Listen, you suggested it this time.
I said, where's your rosé? I'm surprised you don't have any. You're like, good point. Yeah, she would talk, but she's taking a sip.
Sorry.
This is, I should know better than to continue the conversation.
Don't anger the dinosaur.
Don't anger the dinosaur. Yeah, we're the dinosaurs of Succession podcasts. Hopefully you don't want to cull us from your podcast. It's hopefully you are ready for some takes, because we got them from a very big episode of Succession. We'll go through all of the major beats of the episode. We've got a ton of feedback to get through. There's a great interview on The Hollywood Reporter with Brian Cox. It was done by reporter Katie Kilkenny, colleague of mine, who has a really great interview with Brian Cox. I want to pull some of those quotes in for this podcast, and then we'll get through all of your feedback as well. But first, Emily, we got to take a second to thank our sponsors for this episode of the Succession podcast. Those are our friends over at TrueCar. Been a minute since you've talked with me about TrueCar, Emily Fox.
It has. Tell me more.
All right. So TrueCar, every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date. Remember when that happened with us?
Never picked you up.
You never picked me up. The luxury package you got after a big promotion, or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car is worth when it's time to sell or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar. Simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof? Watch as they bump up your value. High mileage? You already knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet, so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, Emily Fox, check out TrueCar today. True cash offer not available in all areas. Speaking of areas, let us get to the area known as Ariestes. You know, I really don't know how. I think it's Argestes.
Yeah. Well, it's really weird because there used to be an Italian restaurant in my hometown called Agrestes.
Ooh, really? Was it good?
It was delicious.
Tell me more about Agrestes. What was your order?
I used to get the PEI mussels in marinara sauce.
You love those PEI mussels.
Well, that's where the origin story is from. So, yeah, my parents used to go there, and they would take my grandparents there. And my grandfather, for whatever reason, used to be like, Emily loves the PEI mussels, and would always order them for me. And so I was just like, I guess I like these. And now I order them almost every time we're somewhere else.
Whenever you see a PEI.
But Agrestes, they had really good focaccia.
Okay. Well, I wonder if they have decent focaccia at Agrestes.
I digress.
I was trying to look up how to pronounce it before the episode even aired. And there was like, you know how like there's those like YouTubes that tell
it's
you how to pronounce
Agrestes.
Things?
Agrestes.
It was Agrestes.
Okay. Agrestes.
I was like, oh, sweet. So it's like a soft G. Like a gyro. But apparently I think it's Argestes. Either way, it's a conference for super, 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 super wealthy and terrible people in the mountains, where you want your bubbliest vest. your bubbliest of bubbly vests.
I don't know. Tom really like bubbled out.
Yeah, Tom bubbled out pretty hard.
Roman called him out for it. I loved that.
Modeled, as often is the case here on Succession, after real things, real events, real places. There's an article in Business Insider talking about how this pretty accurately reflects the Allen and Company Sun Valley Conference in Sun Valley, Idaho, which Emily, I believe you are an annual attendee of such conference. No, it's a lie.
I can't even like pick up on that.
It's a lie.
It's going to be like spoiler. I can't lie about that.
It's an idyllic setting for everything to spin wildly out of control, as is Succession's.
Aren't most settings in this show that way?
It tends to be how it goes.
The loveliest location, and then something rotten happens.
Good things rarely happen on this show. Typically, it's the bad things. And much was the case this week again. We've been waiting for a very long time for the cruises scandals in which all of the bad crimes occurred, right? All the bad ones.
Yeah.
We were waiting for news of that to finally break. It breaks in this episode.
It bubbled up as much as Tom's vest.
Yeah, I think maybe even more.
Yeah, probably more dramatically in this case.
Yeah, more dramatically in this case. And it ends up derailing the Pierce deal. There are some hemming and hawing and backs and forth about whether or not this is actually going to be quite as damaging as everybody thinks that it could be once they get word that this story is on the precipice of breaking. And then it breaks in New York Magazine while they're literally while Logan and Kendall are having breakfast with Nan and Rhea. Very, very awkward as they're trying to just like yada yada through all of the finer points that Nan may have before she even has a second to like sip her grape juice. Or her grapefruit juice, rather. I don't think she's just going straight grape juice.
Yeah, that's like a really hard...
It's an aggressive move. I'm not necessarily mad at it. It actually sounds kind of nice. but in this case, they're not able to make it through the breakfast before everything breaks and, you know, lands on Rhea's radar and everything like that. And multiple attempts to kind of right the ship, as it were, where there's some moments where it feels like maybe things are going to trend upward. Maybe things are going to smooth out. Maybe this iceberg isn't so bad, but it does appear perhaps only that the Titanic is shipping, sinking. And by the Titanic, of course, I mean Waystar, Royco, and the deal that they were trying to make with Pierce. And perhaps it is an apt metaphor, given that all of this disaster is coming from a cruise.
All right. So, like, who's Jack Dawson in this and who's Rose? Like, who's hanging off the side of the door and is going to inevitably fall into the depths of the ocean, even though there was definitely space for him to be on that door with Rose?
So
I'm not mad about that.
No, you're very upset. But it implies that there is some agency to the person who chooses to be Jack, right? Like who is going to willingly offer up their spot on the floating door so that the proverbial Rose can survive? Who is noble enough to do such a thing?
I don't think there's anybody that has that kind of character in this.
Well, what do you
is there anyone who's altruistic?
Well, if you're looking at like romantic couples, it's not going to be Logan and Marcy. Like no one is sacrificing each other in that realm. Probably not going to be Roman and Jerry. although we have a lot to say about both of those characters, but what about Tom and Shiv?
Like, no.
is there a scenario where it's more like, I mean, it's not like an honorable Jack gives up his life so that like, Rose may live, but it's more like Shiv as the Rose being like, there isn't room on here for both of us. You need to go in the freezing
Tom's
cold water.
Like, you know, like hanging out in the water, like icicles starting to form on his eyebrows. And he's like, no, you're right. But like, is he really going to let go?
Yeah. Hopefully not for our sake, because I'd be very sad to lose the Wham scams.
As they've been known to say from that film, never let go.
Yeah, and you never did you? You've held on pretty tightly to Titanic.
I wonder if my parents still later. Have my double VHS.
We'll have to ask them the next time we see them. But this, this was always going to come out. There was always going to be further drama in the saga between the Logan Roys of the world and the Nan Pierces of the world. And this, if this was ever going to come together, it wasn't going to come together easily. Last week we were talking about how it wasn't a surprise that they were able to come to some form of terms. Right, because you need to keep moving that story forward. It was just too early in the season for that to be completely derailed. But by the end of this episode, Nan is walking away from like a bellowing Logan who's like, we're not done here.
And like Rhea has been kicked out of this.
She's been fired.
Which I think was a very interesting take.
Not surprising, right? No. Because Rhea has been like a stone cold mercenary in this whole thing. And she's been trying to gaslight Nan. But like, you don't get one over on Nan Pierce. She's documenting your secret meetings. She's watching. She's got eyes everywhere.
Can you imagine if your first name was Nan?
I mean, I don't know if that's like her actual first name.
I'm sure it's short for Nancy, right?
It might be. I don't know. Old Nan was a character on Game of Thrones.
Which is not a great name to go by.
She told great stories. I can only imagine the stories that Nan Pierce has told over the years. But do you think that this is it? Do you think it's lights out, this is done? Or do you think that this is just a hiccup along the way? A hiccup in the midst of the beautiful ballad of the Roys and the Pierce.
I don't know. I mean, so much of what we've seen in season two has been an extension of season one, in that it's a roller coaster, right? Not to play off of the Parks theme, but in a way, you know, I want to believe that maybe we are done, because it would be cool to see what their next move would actually be. You know, is Roman going to try to like go after that one other guy that he... What's the name of that guy? Do we even know? The one he talks to in the bathroom and does a little coke with.
Right.
Like, is that the next actual feasible move, given the fact that Stewie and Sandy are closing in? We don't know. But there is also a part of me that wants to be like, will Nan come back to the flame? Right. Like, can she not stay away? Are there going to be other influences that kind of push the Pierce family back?
Like, will
them?
The other family members like be mad right. that Nan made this call and like go back to the table?
But I also think that you reap what you sow. And in a lot of ways, the Roy family has not done well for the Pierces, and you know, there's no real confidence.
They were scamming them, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, for logical reasons, I want to be like, no, she should be done, finished, and walk away for good.
Yeah. But it made me so sad because I like these characters a lot. I mean, it's not like them walking away doesn't mean that we never get to see Nan again. And the fact that Rhea is no longer working for the Pierces means she's kind of a free agent, to the point that, I don't know, does Rhea suddenly join the race of people who could succeed Logan Roy, because Logan seems so taken with Rhea? You wonder.
Yeah, but like for reasons of like, you know, his own volition, where he just wants to be able to take over this like huge thing.
Yeah, but Logan hiring Rhea Jarrell does not seem...
Oh,
like
no. I mean, but she would not be like a successor.
No, I think that that's probably aggressive. But I cannot imagine that they, you know, just have Holly Hunter here for a 3-episode arc and then done, right? Like,
it's kind of a baller move if you think about it.
It is. I mean, that would be kind of cool, but at the same time, I feel like she's brought so much to the season, that, you know, I think that Cherry Jones has been fantastic as Nan, but I feel like the sort of the, I don't know, the word play, like the battles of the words, that occur when Rhea Jarrell is on screen, whether it's her and Logan or her and Shiv or even her and Kendall, like she's been great. We haven't really gotten anything between her and Jerry, and I feel like those scenes could kill it. Her versus Roman could kill it. We haven't even gotten her like sizing up the very thin mountain that is Cousin Gregory, Mount St. Gregory. Mount Ichabod. The Crane Cliffs have yet to be scaled.
Wow, I like that.
So I feel like we're not done with those characters. Yeah. It's just a matter of how that plays out. The next episode of Succession is called Return.
So ominous.
You know, we'll talk about that maybe more at the end of the podcast, to like kind of sketch out some of the ideas of like what that could be hinting at. But could it be, just to talk about it now since I think it's topical, could it be like an attempt to get the Pierces to return to the table, is something worth weighing. Logan, outside of this, is also just doing poorly. Like, his health does not seem great. He's puking up Cobb salad in the middle of the restaurant. He's kicking the crap out of his kid in public, right? Like, he's spiraling out.
Very upsetting.
Yeah. What do you make of everything that's going on with Logan?
Well, I think it's, you know, obviously tense times, and he's used to dealing with a load of stress, and we've seen the scars on his back. He's a man that's endured a lot of, you know, terrible things from, you know, very little that we know, but there's abuse here. There's mental, you know, manipulation going on always. And I think it really manifests physically for him in this particular episode where, like, you know, all of a sudden he like can't handle the stress of like this article coming out and these tense negotiations happening and things not going his way. So he's like barfing in the middle of a restaurant. And then to see his rage sort of show up in this slap for Roman and to watch Kendall defend Roman in that moment, so, like almost like a reflex, was a pretty incredible scene. I know that you and I looked at each other, jaws dropped.
Mouths agape.
Yeah. We were just sort of sitting there in awe with our eyes wide open. That was a really compelling and crazy moment for you and me, I think.
Well, what was great about it is like, here's, you know, zombie Kendall finally like rise from the grave.
Yeah, what does
like,
it you take know? For you to snap out of it? A slap across someone else's face?
Well, it's just, like, it's interesting that like, that's the line. I mean, that had been a line for him in season one, right? Like when Logan was physical with Kendall's kids. So this has happened before, and Kendall obviously reacted poorly to it then. But to see him react poorly to it now means that there is still some Kendall Roy in that zombie husk that has been shuffling around all season long.
It does make me wonder how many times Kendall himself has gotten slapped.
Has either gotten slapped or has witnessed Logan do this before.
These are adult children who are still getting hit by their father.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we've only seen it, you know, from the perspective of Roman getting hit. But like, I have to believe if that happened to Roman, that probably happened to each one of them in their own way.
Yeah. So Brian Cox, in this interview that I referenced before, he weighed in on the subject of Logan hitting Roman. So this is the quote from Brian Cox that he gave to Katie Kilkenny at The Hollywood Reporter. He said, "I think it was an anomaly. I think he lashed out and it just happened to be Roman who got it. Roman is particularly annoying sometimes, and he pushes his luck. He's constantly being a bit of an idiot. He's constantly making jokes. He's constantly mistiming things. But at the same time, interestingly enough, I think Logan's aware that Roman's achieving a greater viability as a potential successor, and he's becoming a much more total person. He's very acutely aware that his children have such flaws, especially when he's under the pressure that he's under as the season is mounting up. Who the hell is going to take over? Who the hell can he trust? In Boar on the Floor, you see the exposed Logan, the Logan that we don't really see too often, the guy who's saying the world is against me. He knows how to put on the armor where there needs to be armor, and then later on he apologizes because I think he also realizes that Roman is clearly going through some kind of existential crisis. He doesn't know it's a sexual crisis, but he knows that there's something going on with him." I think that that's very interesting insight from Brian Cox into the dynamic between Logan and Roman, especially as over the past few podcasts, Emily, we've been talking about, like, so if season one was like really the Kendall season, and if season two is seeming to be the Shiv season, as far as like the likeliest successors, then the trajectory would take you to like Roman being the likely successor for season three. Does that seem to be a direction that we're building toward in your eyes? Like, did this episode advance the ball in that way? There's certainly the scenes between the rock star and the mole woman.
Poor Jerry.
I know. We love Jerry.
I know. I mean, I could see that potentially being, you know, a storyline that makes sense, especially given what we know so far. But I also, I kind of think it's a cop out to just say that this is an anomaly. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't disagree. Yeah. I mean, I think it's an actor's responsibility to live in the skin of their character, and so they have to like view things from their perspective. So I think for Brian Cox, like, kind of like,
are you a Brian Cox apologist right now?
well, listen, anything for O'Hagan,
yeah,
obviously.
Fair enough.
So I can imagine it from his perspective. There, it doesn't strike me as an anomaly.
No, I don't think that that's, you know, what we're meant to think either.
I think that Logan Roy is a man who's used to operating in the world without consequences or without giving too much of a crap about potential consequences.
Yeah,
that like any consequences that come his way are surmountable. You know, he's going to be able to find some way to, you know, either talk his way out of it or have somebody buy their way, you know, buy his way out of it. Or in the case of what just happened with Roman, he maybe could punch his way out of it.
Yeah.
And we've seen him lash out physically before.
Right.
So, you know, I don't think that you could just chalk it up to an anomaly. I think that you have to say that, like, this is consistent with who this man is. And especially as he's losing his grasp on his health. You know, this episode really was like the first time in a while that, you know, we've been reminded of the fact that he's just, you know, he's not the, he is a dinosaur, you know, is he extinct yet? No, but is the meteor coming? Probably. And I don't think that it's just as simple as like altitude sickness. No. You know, I think that this is a man who is both massively stressed out and also is just spinning out a little bit in terms of his health.
Speaking of, do you want to talk about Shiv's role in this particular episode, especially in coining the term dinosaur towards Logan during this entire sort of like panel?
Well, the Shiv storyline this week was great because, you know, this is coming right off of the field trip to the Pierces, right? We're coming right off of the heels of Turnhaven and the big explosive dinner revelation of like, oh, come on, Dad, for F's sake, just say it's me. And that causing all sorts of problems and
not the brightest move.
Yeah, it wasn't the greatest move. And again, Brian Cox has some interesting comments about that.
Shiv, if you were a man, I would have hit you.
No, Brian Cox.
Sorry, that was my greatest Brian Cox.
Siobhan! Brian Cox says,
Mossy!
Yeah, everybody, this is Brian Cox's take on the relationship between Logan and Shiv right now. He says, everybody says in relation to Shiv, he's playing her along, but I don't think that's true for one second. I think he genuinely believes that she could be a possible successor because she's quite clearly his favorite child, and he quite clearly adores his daughter. He's tolerant of her idiot husband, and he's quite happy to throw him to the sharks because he feels that he's an opportunist.
I mean, that's how we feel, too.
I don't want him to get eaten by sharks until maybe the series finale would be fine. He continues. He says he can see through everybody. Logan can see through everybody, but he also understands how things operate, and that's the problem. So he genuinely thinks, oh, yes, my daughter could be the successor. And Shiv's problem is that she can't keep her big mouth shut. She's a hopeless poker player. So that, in Brian Cox's estimation, is the problem with Shiv. I think that that is a problem with Shiv, that, like, you know, she wasn't able to play this cool at all last week. But now this episode was there were moments where it was kind of like she wanted to take her ball and go home, right? Like, you know, she doesn't get the invite to Ariestes. She doesn't get invited out to the retreat. She doesn't get invited out there. Everybody else is getting, she's like being told like, oh, we didn't have enough passes. And she's like, shut up, Shakespeare, Frank. You know, that's not the truth. Frank T. Nelson. And she's like very annoyed about the whole thing. And then when she does get summoned out, it's because Logan's like, are you going to help us or not? Like, this is a crisis and we need you. And then when, you know, they want to have Shiv go out on the panel to talk about the Me Too of it all, and to be like a female voice in the room to, you know, maybe bring a little bit more of like a liberally minded perspective to the proceedings, they're turning to Shiv for that. And Shiv is like, oh, hell no, no way. Not me. You know, I haven't really been read in. I haven't really been caught up on what's going on.
She's salty.
But it's also interesting because, like, this is a push comes to shove moment for Shiv, right? Like, this is a, like, if you're going to be in charge of this company someday, then put up and show up your value a little bit. And she really is reluctant to do it until she has that conversation with Rhea, where Rhea is basically like, yeah, this could be a big deal if you step up right now. Like, maybe you could save this whole thing.
I hate to be a Shiv sympathizer because I do think that she has like just the same amount of ego on her that her brothers do and her father does. But I tend to see how she could feel alienated within this sort of familial structure and this company altogether. She's never been invited to the table, right? Like, it's going back to the whole table idea that, like, Tom's like, you're at the table. Just do what you need to do. But, like, at the same time, she's been an outsider for this whole time. So for her to waltz in and sort of clean up the mess, which is, you know, understandably something she's probably done as a campaign manager, like working for politicians, it feels almost a little too close to home to just be able to walk in and wipe the floor clean and take care of it, even though she is slated to be the next successor purportedly. So I don't know. It's difficult. Like, I see why she kind of is being, you know, salty and angry about it. But I also kind of agree where it's like, no, this is your moment to shine. Walk in and like clean up.
Yeah.
You got this.
Yeah. It was fascinating stuff. And like, eventually, you know, she's going to decide like, okay, I want to say something and I want to be the only one who says something after she, you know, after she had already been like, I don't want to do it at all. And now she's like, I want to do it and I want to do it alone. I don't want Kendall and Roman on stage with me. And both Kendall and Roman, who are both, you know, they're first of all, Kendall is certainly dad's number one boy and he just wants to get out there and do the right thing. I thought it was interesting that Kendall is the one who wants to be like, there's going to be consequences for this. There'll be a thorough investigation. There will be consequences.
That was refreshing.
Roman's attitude is literally, we'll do whatever they want. We'll do whatever you want.
Not refreshing. Poor choice of words.
You know, but like, I mean, that fits with what his, the brand that he wants to cultivate is that he just wants to be sort of like the rock star FU cool kid, right? Which is kind of funny because, like, wasn't that like what Kendall kind of wanted to be once upon a time? He's the dude who's like listening to hip hop in the back of the car and like pumping himself up in the back of the car in the very first episode of the whole series. He's the one who like wants to go to like the hip art kids with, and like, you know, are my sneakers cool enough or are they stupid? Let me take them off. You know, like he wanted to be that guy. And I think that Roman fancies himself as like naturally that guy. Like he's got sort of a Mick Jagger thing going on. It's why he calls himself the rock star.
If we took all of the Roy siblings and put them into, I don't know, a blender of sorts and hyper decanted them, would they become like the golden child Roy together?
I don't know.
One?
I don't. That's a terrifying thing. So we've blended all of them. Like, yeah, they're mush now.
They
like,
all got
like
put in a Vitamix and they were hyper decanted.
Maybe they are the golden child Roy because they're all dead and they're juice now.
But you know what
and
I mean?
We drink like, them up.
If we combined all of their strengths and like sort of their wants too, right? Because like there's a part of each one of them that wants to be taken seriously, like their other sibling that they're comparing themselves to.
The question is like, are they like the most like dangerous person on the planet? This unholy like trinity of creatures that you've created by blending them together. Is this like the most like dangerous entity on the planet because it's hyper capable, or is this the most dangerous entity on the planet because they are hyper incompetent? That would be the question that I would have in that scenario. I just think that their three different play styles was really interesting because like you do have Roman, who's sort of like the shrug emoticon, right? Like he's like the shrug ASCII art of just like kind of like holding his arms out to the sides and being like literally whatever you want. Kendall, I think, is trying in this moment to be still his dad's, you know, sharpest tool in the arsenal.
Which emoticon is he? Or emoji?
I don't know. He's they're all the eggplant, frankly.
I think Shiv is the hair flip.
Sure, I like that. But I think for Kendall, he's trying to still embody his father's values and like his father's vision of the company. But
his father's the skull.
But in the modern day. Right. Like he's trying to be like a modern day dinosaur, I guess. Like, you know, he doesn't want to be in those prehistoric times, but he still wants to uphold some of those prehistoric values. But he knows that there have to be consequences.
So he's a Neanderthal.
Like,
they're going to go out of style.
He's in the process of evolution. He's on his way. He's trying. Mm-hmm. He's trying very hard. Whereas Shiv is trying to be like, you know, kind of rock star in her own way, but is really she's playing for the Pierces in the house. You know, she's playing for the Nans. You know, that's the crowd that she's aiming for. And she's literally talking about her father as though he's a dinosaur. So you're getting in that scene where they're all on the panel together. I felt like it was a really great representation of the three different takes of the three different potential successors, or at least the three different potential most obvious successors. There could be a wild pitch from out of nowhere for whoever ends up taking over the company someday. But I thought that was cool. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
Big fan.
Agreed.
All right. Well, let's segue into some feedback. Cause I think that'll be able to be that'll be a nice way to guide us through the rest of the episode and a bunch of other plot points that we have not touched on yet. Starting with Brendan Fitzpatrick, who writes in and says, is this the last that we are going to see of Cherry Jones and PGN this season? I hope not. I hope that when Logan says this isn't over, that it's going to be true. What do you think? What's your prediction? Do you think that we see more of old man Pierce?
Another day, another mansion, another glass of grapefruit juice. I think we can make it work in some way. Yeah. There's no way that this is the last time they cross paths.
It's a shame that the next episode is not called Return Haven. You know?
Sorry.
Because it was Turn Haven before, and now it's about to be returned. So why not return Haven?
All right, relax. Move on to the next question.
But do you think we'll see her again?
I think we will. I think Cherry Jones is just such an incredible actress, and it's going to be great.
What do we think, Stewie and Sandy? Are they going to buy up Pierce? Is that what's going to happen? Has that been set up? Because there's that moment where Kendall goes to give Stewie the heads up.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, I feel like I owe you an explanation. I feel like, you know, we were friends and I screwed you over to some degree. And like, I feel like you should know that something's coming and it's going to be big and you're not going to be able to stop us. And Stewie's like, cool, I don't trust you at all. And then the whole story blows up. And then Stewie comes back to Kendall later and is like, oh, well, whatever you were going to do, I guess it's not going to happen anymore. And then I think that, like, to some degree, the feud between Logan and Nan, it wasn't private. It wasn't exactly public, but it wasn't exactly quiet either.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so
could have been someone that was privy to that.
So I do just wonder, like, is that something that we could see? Like, could we see Nan return to the mix because Stewie and Sandy's escalated tactics in coming after Waystar would involve taking the thing that Logan wants so much?
Or, you know, with Rhea being fired, will she approach Stewie and Sandy and be like, hey, I've got a great deal for you. Let me show you how to do it.
Whoa, was that your Holly Hunter?
Yeah, how'd it sound?
Your Holly Hunter's not bad.
Because she sounds like she ate a little bit of dirt, but she still got something in her.
A little bit of what?
Yeah, a little bit of dirt.
Oh, she just had like a little dirty
lunch?
A little
bit of grit.
Yeah, a little gray snack.
Yeah, you know.
Oh my God, I like your Holly Hunter.
Thanks so much, Josh.
I didn't know. Is that my Uncle Steve?
It does sound like Uncle Steve a little bit. But you know, like, I could see Holly Hunter turning around and being like, yeah, how do I make this a worthwhile deal for myself? Because I was about to cash out.
Right.
You know? Can she go back to Nan and be like, let's see how we can really make it hurt for the Roys, who are clearly like a pretty messed up and vulnerable company. Like, maybe we jump ship and do this instead.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of ships, let's talk about the story that leaked about cruises.
Mm.
Zach Brooks writes in and goes, someone has to be behind the story leaking. Was it Kendall? Was it Shiv? Maybe Nan? I get the feeling that Kendall is sabotaging things behind Logan's back. It would explain his inconsistent behavior week to week. All right, Emily, put on your tinfoil hat. Let's
we hear for you.
We hear for you. We want to get, you know, very conspiratorial here for you. Do you think that somebody, is there a mole? Talk about the mole woman in terms of Jerry. Is there a mole woman or man or person in the midst that leaked this story out? What's your theory? How was it possible that this came out at all?
Let's do a deep dive into what we already know. Okay. So cousin Greg gets pulled into this, needs to shred documents during Thanksgiving. Tom obviously is in the loop, but doesn't really want to know what's going on, but obviously knows what's going on. Greg saves a copy of this. Greg mentions something to the effect of being able to blackmail Kendall at some point while they're at Shiv's wedding. Do you remember this?
Yes, I do.
Greg moves into an apartment that Kendall has bought for him.
Yeah.
Did he bring the papers to that apartment?
Right.
Did Kendall rage one night, find the papers, and then say to himself, maybe this is important to use for some sort of collateral later on?
Intriguing. And do you think that would be Kendall in control of his faculties, or do you think it would be like a Mr. Robot moment where his devious alter ego took over and he's like, I'm going to sabotage. I'm going to take
only
down the biggest corporation of all time.
Only time will tell.
Hello, friend. Hello, cousin Greg.
I mean, Kendall is on the edge of being good or evil or both right now. He's sort of like Jekyll and Hyde in this moment.
Well, I mean, we have talked about a little bit the possibility of like, is the rock bottom? Have we seen Kendall's rock bottom,
right?
Or is he going to like sink lower than that with intention, right? Like, is he going to be like, you know what, there's further to go and I'm going to be in control of that journey, and like he's going to decide to just like break all the way bad and be an awful human being and like betray his father, and which wouldn't necessarily be the worst thing to do, betraying a man like Logan Roy, but like,
right,
the way in which he does something like that.
But we seemingly watched Kendall sort of, you know, convince Nan's, what was it, niece, to sign on and you know, ultimately get
Naomi,
all of the Pierce family to sign on to this deal. So how backstabbing would it be for him to plant this story and basically bungle the deal.
I think it's interesting. Yeah. I think the idea of Kendall and Greg living together right now, Kendall knowing that from Greg, like Greg did like give him a little bit of a tip off.
Like, if you want to be smart about it,
is it giving too much credit to Kendall to remember that detail, considering everything else that happened that night?
I mean, he's looking for, you know, flat surfaces to snort whatever he can. So maybe he found a pile of papers and read it while he did a line or
it
two.
It sparked his memory of it.
I don't know.
I mean, to do something like this would mean that they're like really withholding some of Kendall from us.
Right.
And one of the things that I've really loved about the Kendall storyline this season is how along for the ride of his misery we have been.
Yeah.
That we have been like spared like no detail. We've like been forced to watch in unflinching agony just how devastated this man is and the absolute ruin that his life has become. So for him to be having like some sort of secret side plot where he's actively sabotaging the company so that he could take it over again or something like that. Feels like maybe not this show to me, but I'm willing to be proven wrong. I'm open to that bearing out that Kendall is doing something sketchy. I mean, he's always doing something sketchy, but doing something sketchy that we as the audience have not yet been privy to.
Second theory.
I think it's a good theory, though, Fox. I like it.
Second theory. We know that cousin Greg can be compromised. We've watched him sort of flail, you know, in the moments with the biographer,
mm-hmm.
where he didn't really even necessarily know that he shouldn't take that meeting, period. So was there some other sort of third party that came into this and was like, hey, just like tell us this little thing. Like, right. Don't worry about it. We don't know that. But I do find it interesting that Mo was tied up in all of this.
Right.
And Mo is dead.
Yes.
And perhaps this is a complete thing that was created because they needed to pin it on somebody because they figured out that there was a mole earlier.
A Mo.
And it was easy.
Mo Patrol.
You know what I mean, though? And it was easier to put it on Mo and have it be a story that broke. And like Mo was such a terrible guy, but he's gone now. And like Mo Lester, like the whole thing. And just have it be out there and in the open because that was the easiest way to get this out there with all these other people involved.
I think I got to suspect Fisher Stevens.
Ah, that's an interesting character that literally did not approach like anybody until this episode.
Well, yeah, it was his first appearance. The first appearance of Fisher Stevens, a.k.a. Minkowski. Do you know who Minkowski is, Emily?
Yes,
Who's Minkowski?
I don't remember, but he's important.
He was Fisher Stevens on Lost. He was in The Constant.
Yes, thank you.
He was like, the roller coaster. Oh, my God, I'm traveling through time. And, like, he freaks out, and Desmond's like, oh, my God, I don't know what's going on. And
question, then, was he more tan in Lost or this episode?
Hard to say. I was going to say something else. You probably know what I was going to say, but I'm not going to say it out loud. Benjamin. Well, you haven't seen Short Circuit. You're not a Short Circuit person, are you? You don't really know Johnny Five.
I think we watched it.
I think we said we would watch it. I don't think that we actually did. I think it was one of those things where it's like, oh, let's watch Short Circuit. You're like, oh, yeah, totally. Maybe not tonight. I'm like, oh, okay. And then you're like, he forgot, thank God.
Yeah, that was
well,
like,
I remember now, Fox.
12 years ago.
12 years ago. I don't think it was actually Minkowski. I like the Kendall theory. I think that it feels, it doesn't feel fully Succession. It feels a little more Mr. Robot. Which is, you know, obviously a fantastic show that I'm very eager to start podcasting about again very, very soon in the very near future. But I just think it's a different show. I think that this is to some degree, in my mind, like we've never been denied Kendall's agenda. That being said, it does feel like there were some inconsistencies with him this episode, at least as far as what we've seen from him throughout the season so far, where, you know, he does break character by doing what he believes is a solid for Stewie. He does break character by screaming at his father after his father beats the crap out of Roman. So what is that all about? Okay. Next feedback. Let's turn it over to your friend and mine, Dr. Amanda Rabinowitz.
Yes.
Who writes it and says, one thing that I'm really looking forward to you guys talking about is Logan's response to the Cruise scandal. He says, no one real gives a fuck. It's all about me. It's not real. It's not honest. Is this one of the first times that we're seeing consequences of the Me Too movement as viewed through the eyes of a powerful man like Logan Roy? What insight do we get into the culture that supports misogyny, sexual harassment, and rape from Logan's response. And a similar question from Tom Palmer, who wrote it and said, this episode showed a completely different perspective of the Me Too movement. How true to life do you think some of these conversations are? Tom, I think probably pretty true would be my guess, like from the perspective of the accused, from the perspectives of the perpetrators. It's not something certainly in the era that we're in that you see a ton of in fiction of like those characters being presented as, and I use the word protagonist as like literally that's like their active role in the story. Not that they're good people by any stretch of the imagination, but the Roys are the protagonists of Succession. And so getting the perspective of these awful, powerful people in the midst of a Me Too adjacent crisis as they're trying to like kind of wade through those waters in this world's version of that atmosphere. It was really interesting. It was awful and despicable. And Logan just like kind of being so dismissive about it was terrible, but like also completely on brand, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think the underlying theme of anything that comes into sort of, I don't know, like I'm trying to think of like the right words for this. When it comes down to any sort of sexual assault, rape, you know, an issue of consent, any of this, it really comes down to power. And we're talking about people who are very powerful, who do not want power to be taken from them. And this is an affront to their power. And to have someone challenge their power, even if they are not the ones that are, you know, specifically accused, is a threatening position for them. And in this particular environment and climate where Me Too is, you know, a pretty prevalent and well-known, you know, thing that is happening and movement that is important and, you know, gathering speed and sort of understanding what's going on. It's super interesting to see Logan Roy just be like, no, they're coming after me.
Right.
This is all about me.
Yeah.
And it's not about you. It's not. I mean, yes, you are sort of the larger power structure that's part of this, but
it makes events like the Cruise scandal possible.
Yes. And in a way, sure, that means
in that sense, it's about you.
It is about you. But in reality, it's about, you know,
victims
and being treated properly and professionally rather than being exploited and taken advantage of and paid off to be quiet.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we're only starting to grasp how prevalent that is, you know, in a larger, you know, public sense in reality. So in this show, it's even more important to kind of see like how it's portrayed and to sort of, you know, see how these characters are written out. I mean, I don't want to misspeak on any of this, but I think it's very interesting to see how threatened he is by this, even though, you know, it's not implicating
him directly,
right. But obviously him as the organization, which he cares about more than almost anything else. It's
but also like what skeletons are in his specific closet.
Right. It makes you wonder, right? It makes you wonder. So that's sort of my take.
Well, I think one of the reasons why this show is so good is
thanks for speaking about this in your real voice.
Well, I've unmasked myself for the remainder of the podcast.
This is so good.
One of the reasons why I think this show is so great is because it's capturing lightning in a bottle, right?
Like topical.
It's in the zeitgeist. You know, it's dealing with a lot of what we are dealing with in not just America but globally, of you know the types of people that are in charge and are
historically
I mean not just like just now, but I think that we are in this really compelling like a really like generous way of describing this compelling time, this terrifying
this compelling time where women are starting to speak out and men too about being sexually assaulted.
Well,
what
no,
a compelling I mean, time. I know.
The fact that we're in like this horrifying period of time right now, where horrifyingly powerful people, or powerful horrifying people, however you want to put it, however you want to order it, are finding themselves challenged in some ways, and like they're in many respects There are certainly people who are being taken down, being canceled, you know, people who are suffering consequences for their ridiculously disgusting actions, and deservedly so. And then there are people who are getting away with it. There are people who are walking away unscathed, but like, you're seeing stories like this pop up every single frickin' day. So for it to be tackled in succession in the way that it's going to be tackled the same way that everything gets talked about on this show, from the perspective of the people who these stories are often written about, or who are at least in bed with the people who these stories are often written about. Like, when we're talking about people who are like the victims of the Roys on this show, they're very rarely like fully fleshed out characters. Typically they're like the contractors who are getting blamed for shoving dead raccoons in a chimney, you know, or like the kid who's being told you can get $1 million if you hit a home run, and then he just gets laughed at publicly. Those are the people who, or the maid who has to clean up Kendall's shit, or the cook who's invited for a drink, but not really. You still got work to do. Those are the people who are suffering the consequences of this grand chess game that the Roys and the Roys of the world and the Roy adjacents are playing. So to get a story in the Me Too space that is being articulated from their perspective, I thought was interesting. I thought was great. I thought it was tragically real when Tom says, how true to life do you think some of those conversations are? I think very true. Like, I don't think that when the Harvey Weinstein stuff started coming out, that Harvey Weinstein's like, oh, they're right, I'm such a bad guy.
Yeah, definitely.
I should turn myself in. No, he's probably like, oh, the bastards are coming after me. It's all
about they want my money.
You know, like it's that. And one of the reasons why this show is excellent and exceptional and is really going supernova, as Cousin Benjamin would say, is because we are being invited to peek behind a very elite exclusive curtain. And how exact to reality is it? I imagine that many of these people in charge aren't quite as articulate and poetic and beautifully written as the characters of Succession, thanks to, you know, Jesse Armstrong and his fleet of writers. But I imagine that a lot of the sentiments and a lot of like the decisions and a lot of the dynamics between these people and these agencies are very close to real. That's part of why I love it.
Interject really quickly. That was so much more eloquently said.
I don't know. I feel like I just said garbage.
No,
wobbly wobbly drop. Speaking of the Lonely Island,
into my grave plot. Yeah. I have to say, no. You said it so well, and thank you for saying it the way that you did.
So let's talk about something else that happens with Logan, which we've talked about a little bit already, is him hitting Roman. And we've mentioned Cousin Benjamin already.
On to lighter things.
And Cousin Ben sent me a text the other night without any warning whatsoever. And it was three separate texts. The first one was, I'll kill Logan. The second one was, I will kill him. The third one was, he touches sweet Roman like that. So he was obviously very upset. He was very upset that his sweet, sweet Roman was hit by Logan. And of course, we're all upset. Like, nobody likes Roman, really. Like, he's a piece of garbage.
How many times have you felt compelled to slap him?
Yeah, but I'm not his dad. You know? I know. You don't do that. That's not something you do.
Do you think he's going to be like, Jerry, do that?
I mean, maybe. I mean, like he.
But they have no contact, you know, physically.
But I don't think that that's something that he desired. And I think it was the way that he put the fallout of that scene was remarkable. Yeah, like we were aghast, you and I.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, our heads in our hands of like, holy shit, I can't believe that just happened.
And he played it off like nothing.
He's like, I'm fine, too. Shut up, get off me.
But that's part of it too, where it's like, if that had been the only time that it ever happened, I think he would have been much more upset. The fact that he walked away from it the same way everyone else did, where they were like, whoa, that was pretty messed up. And he was like, no, it's fine. It's like, whatever. Like, that shows a pattern of abuse, even if it's not something that happens super frequently.
Yeah. But it was fascinating that Kendall reacted the way that he did. This is something that Tom Palmer had written and said, Kendall leaping immediately to Roman's defense after Logan hit him. He reacted similarly last season when his father hit his son. It seems like Kendall will allow infinite emotional abuse, but the moment it gets physical, he shuts it down. What does this say about him? And Dave Baker had also added, what future impact will Logan slapping Roman have on the Roy siblings? And just in the way that Kendall reacted, there has been such a divide between Kendall and Roman all season long. Is this going to heal some of that rift, or do you think that it's still going to be where it's at, given the way that like Roman reacted to everything, where Roman was trying to kind of be like, this wasn't a big deal?
I don't know. I think, you know, there is a level of, you know, wanting them to come together as brothers, especially given what has, you know, transpired. I also think that they should get together because Shiv is the common enemy now. Like, does it make sense for them to sort of powwow and figure out like what's going on and how to handle all of this and to kind of be joined in as a team? I don't know.
Yeah. I'm really excited to see like the next scene between Kendall and Roman.
Well, like we saw in the premiere that they're going back to England and talking to their mom.
Right. In the preview for return.
Sorry, premiere.
Yeah. I think that that's
By
what
premiere, I,
think that,
I mean preview.
I think that that's what the return refers to. It seems like a little bit of a reckoning of what happened on Shiv's wedding night. Probably not just for Kendall. I imagine other people are going to have to come to a reckoning, i.e. Shiv and Tom to some degree.
And we'll then Logan is there that. Too to kind of talk about that dead guy.
Yeah, the dead man. The dead man.
We know his first name.
We did, and I don't remember it. I just don't have it in front
That's
of me.
That's because the Roys paid us off.
They did.
Don't remember his name.
Oh, the money,
don't know who he is.
The money was so sweet, though. We just bought ice cream with it. It was delicious. S'mores flavors. All right. This is from Jackie Tomeyer, who writes in, my one concern is Logan's health. Jackie, that's your one concern. I'm just kidding. I love you, Jackie. All right. So Jackie writes in and says, my one concern is Logan's health. What is going on? He seems to be faltering again. Is it really the altitude? Why isn't Marcia in the picture anymore regarding Logan? She was the gatekeeper and now seems to have abandoned him. What is happening there? Do you have any hot takes on where Marcia stands
Marcia
in the midst of
like
all this?
Done with this shit.
She's over it. She just wants the money.
I don't blame her.
She's poisoning the tea. She's poisoning the Cobb salads.
More like she's like, I don't want to wear this stupid vest. I'm out.
Yeah, she doesn't want the bubbly vest. No. The wobbly vest. Griffin J. Campbell writes in and says, there's no way this season doesn't end with Roman and Jerry in charge, right? They haven't let us forget Jerry is technically the successor. That plus the fact that Ken and Shiv's rivalry is making it feel like the only option is the third option. Also, Logan's nickname for Roman is Romulus.
Yeah.
In classical mythology, Romulus killed his brother Remus and then became the founder slash first emperor of Rome. I've officially talked myself into it. Roman will sit on the Iron Throne. What do you think? Will Roman be the king of the proverbial Westeros by the end of season two of Succession?
I mean, if he became that, it would make for a great season three.
It'd be remarkable.
It would be really, really rocky.
Brian Cox, in his interview with The Hollywood Reporter, speaks to that a tiny, tiny bit. This is what he says. A little bit suggestive. You could skip ahead a minute if you don't want to hear this. I think this is a little bit, this is a little spicy.
All right.
What Brian Cox says. He says, the one person in the family that Logan feels still has potential is Roman.
Yeah.
Even though Roman seems to be a fuck up on so many occasions, there are certain things that Roman actually gets right. And also, he's on a huge learning curve. It's going to be interesting to see how that relationship plays out over the third season, for example, where Roman is going to go in terms of his father. Of course, I don't want to give anything away, but there's a lot going on and there's a lot to come, which sets up a really quite sparky third season. That's the quote from Brian Cox. So if you're a Roman Roy fan, you could be upset that he just got hit in the mouth this week. But it seems like he might get a chance to hit back at some point next year, at the very least, if not sooner.
I don't know. I'm not going to put all of my eggs in one basket.
You don't want to handle any eggs at all.
That's fair.
Personally.
But I do kind of want to dress up as Jerry for Halloween with a teeny.
Does that mean I have to be Roman?
Yes.
Oh, my God. It's going to be a very interesting Halloween.
Grow your hair out. You skipped your haircut this week. So
but
it's
I
fine.
Don't like I have very thin skin. I don't like to be verbally abused. It's not my favorite thing.
But you would be fine. Also, like, why would that be part of the Halloween costume?
I don't know. I've advanced the ball in a very weird way.
Relax.
I apologize. Now, okay. Ooh, interesting.
But I just kind of like want to dress up like Jerry and like walk around with a martini.
That's great. Okay. Final piece of feedback. We'll throw it back to Fitzy Brendan, who says, what would your ATN tagline be? We know that it started off as "we're listening," which was problematic because we are literally listening, apparently, which was so great. And then "we hear you," which Tom, I think, rightfully was like, that's the same thing, basically. And then ultimately morphing to "we hear for you." Do you think that they landed on the right thing? Did that work for you? "We hear
no.
for you."
Didn't. It's terrible.
You don't have any backup suggestions?
Yes, I do, but what I want to hear yours first.
Oh, that's a fun game.
Yeah.
That's a fun
Come
game.
Come on, Wiggler.
You want to throw it to me first?
Come on.
How about ATN, "we awful"? ATN, "we terrible." "We nightmare people."
No.
ATN, "we here for the destruction of civilization."
No.
I don't think that sells.
I was going to say, like, ATN, "we're ready for you.
We're ready for you. We're ready for you. We're ready for you."
Like we're ready. We want to know how you feel, but we also want to like ready ourselves for anything we need to distribute to you. I don't know.
ATN, "we're your best friends." ATN, "we like you guys.
We're here to alienate you from your other family members."
ATN, "I like you."
Your
it would be voice. Good.
I think it would be good. ATN, "it's me, Holly Hunt."
ATN, it's Rhea Jarrell. all right, that's going to do it for us this week on the Succession Podcast, the extraordinarily late Succession Podcast. Thank you for bearing with us over these past couple of weeks and into next week, as well as I am off on a work trip. We will try and get our podcast to you much sooner than we did this time at the very least, but it will almost certainly be delayed as well. I apologize.
I don't think we'll be this bad
for that. Famous last words. We want your feedback for the show either way.
Please.
So much great feedback that we have been getting all season long. You can tweet at us. I am at Round Howard. Emily is at Emilet. You should also tag at Post Show Recaps if you are tweeting your feedback to us. You can also send in your feedback at postshowrecaps.com/feedback. There had been some issues. The Xeroxer had been jammed up in the feedback mails. That's how it works, right? The paper jam had been jammed up, and we hadn't been getting feedback through those means. But I've achieved a workaround, and we're working to fix the entire deal. But at the very least, I will be able to see your feedback if you submit feedback that way now. So postshowrecaps.com/feedback if you want to use our feedback form. Subscribe if you have not done so already. We have a Succession only feed, but you could also subscribe to the main Post Show Recaps feed, where we are doing Down the Hatch. The Lost podcast is still going strong. We are getting ready for some Mr. Robot coverage is coming your way soon. Walking Dead coverage coming your way soon. So Post Show Recaps about to be rather busy as Succession moves along toward the end of the line here for season two. Next up is Return. Emily, we've already talked about a little bit of our theories about Return. It's going to be airing at the same time as the Emmys, yes. Emily. The Succession has already won an Emmy Award. It won a Creative Arts Emmy. It won...
I didn't realize that.
Outstanding Original Main Title Theme Music, which I feel like is rather...
Oh, the composer should
rather
win
deserved,
so many awards
rather
for that.
Deserved, I think so. Pretty.
As a violinist on sabbatical, I gotta say.
Yes, Nicholas Britell, who is the composer of the theme song. So congratulations.
Yes.
Well earned. A couple of awards that it is still nominated for the big night. It's up for Outstanding Writing for the season one finale.
Yes.
It is also up for Outstanding Drama Series. I
love that.
It is nominated against Game of Thrones, so it's going to lose. Game of Thrones clean sweep would be my guess. I don't know about clean sweep, but Game of Thrones is going to win Outstanding Drama. No matter where you fell on it, this is not a question of quality. It's a question of achievement. It's not a hot take. I think the hot take would be Succession is going to beat Game of Thrones.
This is your lukewarm take.
I'm not mad if Succession beats Game of Thrones. I'm thrilled if Succession wins. I think Succession is an outstanding drama and deserves an Emmy. I think it will very likely get one for season two if it doesn't get one for season one.
I'm excited to watch the Emmys by myself.
By yourself, yeah.
You'll be gone.
We will be apart from one another. all right, well, if you're saying bye, I guess I could say bye too.
No. Yeah.
Well, like, we got to end the podcast, okay, so yeah. we may as well say,
guys, if you're watching the Emmys and you want to like tweet me,
just tweet at Emlet. Yeah. She will be watching the Emmys. I will be as well, but I'll be working, so please don't clog my Twitter feed. But we will be
such a curmudgeon.
We will be back talking Succession at some point next week after Return. We'll be talking about either the Emmy winning outstanding drama series Succession, or the Emmy-nominated Outstanding Drama Series Succession. Either way, an outstanding television
series.
Great to be recognized. It's just an honor to be nominated, is what we like to say. All right, Emily Fox, that's going to do it.
Yes.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
And before we close out, one last thanks to our friends over at TrueCar. 60 seconds. That's exactly how long this commercial lasts. You know what else you can do in about a minute? Get an offer for your car with TrueCar. That's right. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, or just listen to my voice, you can get a true cash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or home. Just go to TrueCar and simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Answer a few questions and you'll get an accurate true cash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. It's that easy. After that, you can bring your car in and they'll check it out with you together. You can ask questions and get the answers you need, so there's no surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trade in your car for a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today.